Namaste and welcome to this first weekly update for the graduate program. A couple of things before I get started reading out the feedback, the homework that's come in. Firstly, can you try to keep your feedback relative to on the content of it about the actual stuff we've done in the class? There are a couple of things that have come in which I will answer this time, but are not specifically relevant to the material that we've gone over in the class. What I really want to work with is people that really want to investigate these questions, that really want freedom. And as such, the material in the graduate program class is going to be very direct and therefore about as straight to the point as I can get. And about the most important thing to investigate will be discussed from a different angle each time. So, knowing that, you can probably guess that your mind, your ego, is going to try to distract you with things that aren't quite so relevant. And it's absolutely fine, and you can still ask those, but perhaps it's better in satsang or in the ashram or whichever place that there is to ask those. And there is also the contact form in the Oneness Direct Ashram page, and you can email a question into satsang as well if you don't want to ask in person, or if you can't make it to the actual live satsang. And really, what I want to discuss in this graduate program is only the material that we are discussing the Dissolving Ego course lessons in more depth, and the contemplation, the question that you get each month, and the reading of the passage and the effect it has upon you. And when you read it as the author, as the self, and the deeper look at each lesson really is the crux of breaking through into freedom. And this is a skill to learn. I had to learn along the way to recognize what was was interesting but wasn't going to get me there, and what was going to get me there but perhaps didn't seem so interesting. And as we go into it becomes extraordinarily interesting. So I'll answer everything for now, but next time I do this will be probably a week today. And I really want to hear what's happening when these questions are being looked at, when they investigating this question, where am I, which is this one here. So I just want to say before we get going as well that what it means when you investigate this question, where am I? And you'll find that you can't say exactly, you can't say, well, I'm only in this one place as the silence or as the stillness. And you can't say I'm over there or over here. And what does it mean then? You have to become really interested in what it means to have no location. Can you only be looking through one set of eyes and thinking through one brain then if you're not somewhere in particular? If I have no location, can't find exactly where I am, I can't point to a spot on a map of the universe and say, here I am, this is me here. And it's clear and clear that I am the whole map itself and the paper it's made on, then you must become very interested in what that means. Can you only be looking from one particular body? Or are you looking from everywhere simultaneously through every form? And that is really something to investigate until it's as obvious for you as it is for me. And that what that will mean is you can't identify with any particular body. If you were to ask me, what is your mind doing right now? What are your emotions doing right now? The truest answer that I could give you is, I don't know. Or I might say, which body are you referring to? Both of those would be equally true. There is no sense for me that I'm only looking through one body. It's simultaneously I'm looking from everywhere. It doesn't feel like that in this particular body, because in this particular body there is a sense perception happening from where this body is, and it looks relative to everything else. So seeing through the senses will look like we have a location. Recognizing that greater self that we are, it will seem we're looking from everywhere, that knowingness will build. So then to say that, well, I have this particular problem with this body, or my mind is going nuts, or I don't have enough money, or this relationship that I've got is really screwed up and I need some help to fix it. That's fine, but that must be to come out of illusion permanently. We must begin to see that if you're referencing one body only to tell me how you're doing or what's going on, even how your awakening is going, then you've simultaneously blocked out everywhere else that you're looking from. So this has to become a knowing first. This has to become a knowing. I must be looking from everywhere because I can't seem to be only somewhere. You have to get really, really interested in this, really, really looking at it until, okay, if I am the space in this room, if you take the space in the room that you're in as an example, the space cannot be just present in one corner of the room and absent from everywhere else, can it? It can't be just around the body and not, it stops 2 meters away from the body, for example. So that which is formless, which is what you are, as we proved through lesson three, is going to, if it's present, and we know it is, we can prove that with our inquiry, with our tuning in, it's here. It must be present everywhere, and it cannot be in one place or another. It doesn't fit that category. What does that mean? That means that it's everywhere all the time. You have to run these thought processes through in your brain again and again and again until they become automatic. And that you cannot think of yourself as being only in one place. And you end up identifying in a way with all of creation, all the forms that could ever be or have been. And I know that may seem, oh my God, I've got all this karma to deal with, but actually it just lifts you out of it all then. So you can't really say then when somebody asks you how you're doing, the inner experiences are, I don't know, and it's wonderful. How, what's going on with your mind? I have no idea which mind you're referring to because I don't know where I'm looking from. Or so for you, if I was to give you feedback about this particular body that's speaking, if you ask me where my mind is, then I've either got to lie and pretend I'm only looking through here and say, well, this mind here is quiet. Or I've got to tell the truth and say, well, I don't know actually. I don't know where I'm looking from, or I'm kind of looking from everywhere. And neither of those are really the ultimate truth, kind of somewhere, some composite of them. So you have to honor what you see if you recognize you have no location. Why then go back to singling out one body only and saying this body has this problem, mind has this problem, the karmic pattern is this karmic pattern? Well, to do that, you've got to begin to agree again that you've got a location, that you, the silence, are perceiving only through one body only and simultaneously ignoring everything else. You are being all of these forms right now in this. You can't have a sentient experience as a sofa or a table or a laptop, of course. You can have a slightly more sentient experience as an amoeba, and then as a cat, and then as a human being. You can have this kind of experience. But you are looking through all forms, experiencing as all forms, and from the formless to the formless is pure awareness. It's aware, it's alive. There's nothing such as dead, inert space. It doesn't happen like that. So, because we can't have a conversation with it, we say it's inert. If you ever really get curious about what things are, then it becomes a different thing. So, having said that, I'll start with the feedback, and I'll try to. The other thing I wanted to ask you actually is to try to make the questions concise, to try to, if there is a challenge that you're having, to state the challenge and then maybe the question. And to keep it relevant to the subject. So, okay, so we'll start with the first one. The question is, can you please explain the difference between satsang, darshan, meditation? So, again, this is something that I really would say is relevant to the graduate program. If the question has come in and it does seem relevant to that person, then I apologize, but There isn't really a difference between satsang, darshan, and meditation. Every authentic spiritual practice, whether it's receiving darshan or meditation, is a focus on what is real, learning to acclimatize to the formless consciousness, the pure space of awareness, to recognize that. They're just different ways, different doorways in. Satsang is where we're focusing on what is real, hopefully to have an experiential understanding of it, living as it. Meditation is focus on what's real, focus on the noumenon, ignore the phenomena. Why? Because there is no phenomena, as we see in lesson four. Darshan is just being in a space with an awakened being, with a direct contact, through, sometimes through touch, sometimes through words, sometimes through sight, and sometimes all of those at once. And it really is an individual and unique way that darshan is given. It's technically called a blessing or a visitation with truth, but it really is just the sharing of this space, the formlessness, the reality. Whatever a teacher does is always aimed at getting a student to experience what's real, so that it begins to change them, begins to become their experiential truth. And that makes the huge difference. So really they're just words for the same thing. And we could say the same as self-inquiry, we could say the same of contemplation. When I ask a question in particular, I'm going to be contemplating this question through the thoughts, through the emotions, through the opening experientially, and then right back to the silence. So there is it all just ways to access the noumenon, really. So next one. This question is a bit of a muddle, so I hope it makes sense. Is it okay to feel sad and tearful if you see a situation in your life mirroring a number of beliefs which you realize you have created? But then also hopelessness, as you're unsure what action to take because you don't know whether it's coming from the right place. Then blaming yourself if you don't take any action because ego still believes it needs to do something. What's the best thing to do in a situation like this? Often for me, the default is to do nothing because I'm fearful of actions coming from the wrong place. And I can see my deep-rooted belief of not being able to safely express myself taking over, which makes me tearful. And so the cycle starts again. So, is it okay for you to feel sad and tearful if you can see a situation in your life mirroring a number of beliefs which you realize you have created? Well, I'd say that here ego's been very sneaky, and the tears and the sadness are actually the vasana, meaning the tears aren't about something else. The sadness isn't about some other situation that you've created accidentally, of course, as the self. I'd say the sadness is the vasana. So have a look at the sadness itself and see what that wants to say to you. From what you've written here, it seems like a hopelessness, sadness. There's a sense that it goes around and around again. You've said fearful of actions coming from the wrong place. Makes me tearful. So for me, it's not about what is being said, expressed here. It's about the sadness and this kind of hopelessness. This is never going to get any better. That's the kind of the story, isn't it? There's no way out of this. It's not going to get any better. I can't seem to get beyond this. Whatever the story is behind that hopelessness and that sadness, hopelessness kind of says there's no point. It's just never going to be any better than it is, or something like that. So have a look at sadness itself and work on that one directly, because that is the thing that's underpinning it. Some sense of feeling completely trapped, powerless inside this cycle that I'm just doomed to repeat ad infinitum. So have a look at that to come out of it quickest. That's the underpinning of it. Okay. Hopelessness is as you're unsure what action to take because you don't know whether it's coming from the right place. Then blaming yourself if you don't take any action because ego still believes it needs to do something. So ego's going to feel it needs to do something, but one of the ways it will sustain itself, because it thinks it is the doer, we think we are the doer. And one of the ways it will continue its progression is in thinking that we can do nothing as well. Subtle thing, but okay, if I'm fearful of making the wrong decision and doing the wrong thing, then I might decide I'm not going to do anything because I don't want to do it from the wrong place. That is also a doingness. The self doesn't have the capacity to decide to do or not do, as the unmanifest silence. And all actions are arising spontaneously from the self. You've never decided anything right or wrong, in truth. The self just is, and then some action arises from the body. And when we're believing we are the doer, then we have to experience that. And then we may seem to do the wrong thing or the right thing. An ego, a thought arises, I chose that. But it's never actually been so. When it's idea of doing or not doing, action or inaction, then it is transcended. Then there is only then the silence, the stillness, the peace, the clarity, the wisdom, and actions arising spontaneously. Like right now, I've got no idea what I'm going to say next at all. And I didn't choose to come here and sit and do this at this time. There was a sense, a thought, now's a good time to do it. A movement and the body wanted to do it. But I'm in no way able to believe that I can choose to do or not do something. Why? Because the silence, it cannot do anything at all, can it? It's not moving in that way at all. So there's no need to blame yourself if you don't take an action, because ego still believes it needs to do something. What's the best thing to do in a situation like this? Recognize you're not doing anything. You're also not doing anything. That's all ego's play. What can the stillness actually do? Does it have any hands or feet to move, or a brain to choose or decide or think? It doesn't, in its purest form. Anything that happens before the body came is the only thing that's true. After the body comes, we believe we're thinking, we're deciding, we're doing, we're choosing, we're not doing, we're abstaining from action. None of that is real, I have to say. You know, being as most direct as I can, it's all illusion. All of this problem is not your problem. You just are. And everything else is mind's issue. It's making it up to try and grab your attention, keep you playing with it. So often for me, the default is to do nothing because I'm fearful of actions coming from the wrong place. Just let that whole thing go. It's not even in your choice to choose from the right or the wrong place. It's just not even your issue at all. You just watch and see what happens when you've no idea that you're doing or not doing, and something wonderful will happen. The body will then be capable of higher actions, the mind will be capable of higher thoughts without this confusion in the way. I can see my deep-rooted belief of not being able to safely express myself taking over. Well, I know this particular person, I have had a conversation about this, so perhaps just keep on with the question that we, the questions that we, in the investigation that we did together. It makes me tearful and the cycle starts all over again. It's not about that. It's about two things, this underpinning it, the causality. I can choose my actions or whether to abstain from actions. Makes you have to keep choosing. That's the cause and the effect, the mirror. Lots of things to choose about because I feel I can choose. It goes on and on and on. Instead, the body moves all by itself. The brain moves all by itself. Emotions come up all by themselves spontaneously. That's what it means if there's nobody doing. So, okay, we'll go to the next one. Okay, so Hi Helen, I've been reminding myself of the three things you talked about in the first session. In particular, I've been asking the question, where am I? Probably at least half a dozen times each day. I've been trying to ask this from curiosity rather than wanting any sort of end result. That's good. But just noticing if it is an end result, wanting an end result, it's fine. You don't have to get rid of that, just don't identify with it. I've noticed there's definitely more peace and calmness during these past few days. The stomach pain I experience has eased a fair bit, and there is less drama when I go through a period where I listen to thoughts about the pain. That's good too. There's curiosity about the pain and trying not to label it as such, which really seems to help. Question I have is around meditation. When I sit or just notice the silence, there is this constant peace and presence and peace. It's been like this for a while. No floaty or massive experience is good. You don't want them anyway, because they'll just distract you. Simply the silence, the presence, no person there, although sometimes it may feel like there is something tuning in, so to speak. That's fine too, as long as you don't identify with it. There'll seem to be someone doing something. There are thoughts around where have all the big experiences gone? So I was wondering if I'm still on track. Is my knowing of what I've seen still deepening? Absolutely. Everybody always wants to know about the flashy experiences a teacher had, but really for me, they were very few and far between. Very few. And I'm actually really glad I had this conversation with someone this week that. Because our love of the truth is already so pure, and it has to be in a program like this, even hearing his words, nothing is going to satisfy you other than absolute truth. You don't want anything relative. You don't want any duality left to believe in, at least. And so that's why these experiences are calming down, because only the constant, unending, effortless experience of just being yourself. As silence and you're manifesting and whatever the body and mind is in that moment is going to be satisfactory to you, for you. And nothing else will do it for you. And it's okay. It's actually exciting from my perspective that these experiences are calming down. They will distract you, they will slow you down. And another person that wrote this will absolutely agree that we can all become addicted to flashy experiences. Massive moments of bliss or ecstasy, and all of those, they'll still happen as you sort of let go of the need for them or the want for them. And other things begin to happen in the awakened state that are quite amazing. But they are secondary at best, nothing at all. If you said to me right now, okay, I'll give you the capacity to produce something right out of my hands. Sai Baba was one. He could materialize something right in his hands. Literally, he'd have nothing in his hand, and something would appear in his hand, and he'd give it to the student. And if he said he'd give you the ability to do all of that and take away the truth, I wouldn't accept it at all. I wouldn't accept anything other than truth. And already to be listening to that, to this, you have that kind of attitude. Everyone watching this is has that attitude already to commit to their own growth, continuing growth, and to be willing to study such direct material. What that means is you may not have so many flashy experiences along the way, and that's a good thing. Of course, our ego says, well, I want the fireworks, I want the heart-opening stuff, I want the absolute rolling around on the floor in tears because everything's just too beautiful. Careful what you wish for. It's quite challenging to do the school run or to do the weekly shop or to work your job or walk down the street from that place. And that place is going to happen anyway. But if you trust the process, then these moments will come when you're in private more, where you can let it out or in a safe place. Like for me last night when we finished retreat, there were tears. At the sense of what I've been given and the ability to help other beings and all of that, but it came out in an appropriate place. Not going to start going into samadhi in the middle of the supermarket and just standing there drooling and crying with bliss. That sounds all well and good, but it is a huge, huge, and I can't emphasize this enough, trap. You will become addicted to that, and that is not, for me, a sign of progress. I've seen so many people have massive, massive moment like that, massive, where they're just laughing, crying, rolling around on the floor, shaking, convulsing. I've seen the yogis put their finger on someone's forehead and their third eye, and just completely the person spasming, and all this calm has been worked out, and all of that. And I'm not having a go at that, but it doesn't help a single thing if that student goes right back to their old thought patterns afterwards, does it? Nothing has changed in terms of the quality of our life, the quality of our existence. So it's absolutely not a sign that you're not making progress. To me, it's a sign that you're really making progress that you've put here. No silence, just a silence and presence, no person. Where have all the big experiences gone? Good. Let them go. You will agree with me at some point that nothing at all you can experience. Even if you said, okay, if Shiva, manifested right here now and said, I'm going to take you to heaven, into the celestial realms, you can go there forever. And I'll say, no, thanks. I'm going to stay right here enjoying this. Because no phenomenal experience is ever going to be anywhere near as good as being yourself, ever. It's really important. And I'm labouring this point because we're all going to feel in the graduate programme kind of a back to school thing. Oh, I don't really want to have to study anymore. Why do I have to keep putting so much attention on something that is seemingly not so relevant? But it's those that are willing to do it that will achieve it, and it become a labor of love, a joy, just in the presence itself. When you really let yourself experience it, it is more than anything you could ask for, completely. So there we go. Next. I've been focusing on causality this week, looking where I still believe it and found it in lots of areas. Well, that's good. I can recognize and question it reasonably easily. Things are quieter now, and I'm glad of the reminder in my calendar to question. So this particular person was struggling to remember when things were good, the kind of the investigation, as it happens for all of us, was dropping away. And only then suffering prompted it to restart. So we discussed having something in place to remind us to actually look at the questions to contemplate. So that's good that that's working. I can see how easy it would be to relax and not question. And there is the other trap. The better you feel, the better your life is getting, the less urgent the inquiry will be. And it's up to us then to stimulate that if we want to go all the way. Consciousness, the self, is kind of lazy in a way, in that it doesn't want to always. We have to build a new habit of showing it how it feels to constantly be on the edge of what we know. So for me, in one way, I'm never quite happy in that I'm always wanting to see more. I'm never satisfied with resting on my laurels. There's always more to explore. It's like standing at the gates of paradise and going, it's all right, I can see it's good enough. I don't really need to go in. I can see that it's a nice place. I mean, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you take a step further in each day and kind of cultivate that attitude? Life will just be upgrading itself constantly. So whatever you need to do to get that to happen, and it's good to read that it is happening. The other thing I'm looking at is location and this body in everywhere. I had a strange experience with a bath mat at 4 this morning. Okay. I'm not even going to ask. Is it okay to carry on with this for now or to listen to the rest of the recording for the other homework? I don't want to avoid, but I also feel I want to crack this a bit more. Knowing I'm not the doer is helping too. Mind likes to con me that I am doing still. So that's going to go on for a while. Mine likes to. And you have to systematically look at everything you think you're doing. We might say, okay, I'm not driving. That might be obvious. The body's driving, or I'm not walking. The body's walking. But there might still be identification with I'm choosing, as we said before, with the other student. I'm deciding, I'm acting or not acting, those kind of things. So is it okay to carry on with this for now, or to listen to the rest of the recording? I would, whatever you feel a real pull to investigate, go with that, because that's saying it's alive for you. Maybe just listen to the rest of the recording a couple of times, just to double check that you're not avoiding something. But wherever you really feel a pull, that's saying, okay, this is where I really need to look. And because it's exciting, that means there's something there, a real doorway there for you to push through. And we kind of sometimes have to storm the gates a little bit with our reminders to remember, whichever way we do that. Of myself, I had to. The more blissful I got, the more peaceful I got, the more love was happening, the more abundance started to come. I did like everyone else does. I dropped the inquiry for a while completely, and that, just wanted to enjoy, and that's fine. Then this itch came back, or an urge to continue the evolution, the deepening of the mind and body, but not from a motivation of suffering, from a curiosity that began to develop. So I still, even now, sit in the morning with a cup of tea and just sit in the silence. And whatever I'm investigating, I'll investigate. Currently, I'm obsessed with the line from the Gita that I read out, all those that worship me will come to me. What does it mean to worship me? Me, which is that which is everywhere. So it doesn't matter what you're obsessed with. And of course, being part of the graduate program, I'm giving you things to be obsessed with. That will bear some amazing fruits. So it's okay to completely, yes, to focus on what you want to focus on, to go with that, and just to make sure you're not avoiding looking at something else. It's not an unconscious resistance to looking at the rest of it. Maybe just listen to it all one more time through, or as many times as you want, the original lesson, just to make sure. Okay. Here are a couple of stories. I continued to wake up enraged every morning, and that feeling would dissipate within a few seconds. That was the first homework assignment where I am experiencing myself as a separate or frictional conflict. With a little self-inquiry, a question arose: is it really true I was abandoned by self at conception, prenatal, and birth? Wow, and triple wow. The love and joy I experienced once I realized I was never abandoned and I have always been part of self is amazing. So let's just stop there at that. The sense that I have a location, what that manifests as is I came into this body. I came into it at some point. The body was born and I entered it. And that very idea is the fall from grace that we believe in so much. And it's I'm an entity that comes into the body. You're not an entity, you're everywhere. You're completely the opposite of an entity. If I believe I came into this body and now I'm living in this body, and that at some point I'm going to have to move out when the body is no longer functional, then I'm going to fear the ending of the body. Also, if I believe I came into this body, that's going to come with this memory that I was kicked out of heaven. I was kicked out of the self. I was thrown out into, something. I was this wholeness, and then I was thrown out as a separate being, and now I'm a separate being, and I was abandoned. That feeling, a lot of human beings have this core feeling of being abandoned. And of course, then it shows up in other ways in our life, our people that we need to rely upon quite often abandon us, and that pattern repeats. And it's this core vulnerability, this wound that, even God didn't want me type of thing. And it's just not true. You're looking through your body. Your body is a pair of binoculars that you hold up to look at the self, to look at the rest of yourself, which we call the world, from one particular point, one corner of time and space. You can look at everywhere else. You can see what it looks like to be somewhere, but you're not actually somewhere, you're everywhere. So it's really good that you've broken through that. Also now, when I tune into the silence, I feel a vast sense of love, joy, and gratitude, and sensing the infinite of it all. I'm still working with that question to see it through. That's good, because you need to, you know, stay with any question until it's automatic that you experience. So if I'm asking, is it really true, you know, or where am I? Do I have a location? The time you can drop that question is when you never ever experience yourself again as a separate being. Or if I'm asking, is it really true I'm not good enough? Then when my life is constantly showing me respect and love and appreciation and abundance, then you can drop the question, and only then. Now I realize I'm seeing rage in other people using questions such as, is it really true these phenomena have been abandoned? Where am I? And realizing this is all a mirage, and even the observation of others is happening on the movie screen of self. Would love any other questions that would help open this up. Thanks. So if I haven't been abandoned, if I was not a separate being ever, never came into this body, neither did anyone else. Even though in each brain that thought is being believed completely, it still isn't so. Question that really helped me is it really true there are any other beings? And that question really was really extraordinarily powerful. Why am I so convinced that there are all these other beings and other things? And really to get curious about that. But the where am I question will catch that as well. I don't know where I'm looking from. Can I still say there are any other beings? Can I say anything? Difference, diversity, separation, union, liberation, bondage, all of that happen only possible when there's thoughts and a brain and a form, and we can classify and experience diversity and opposites and all of that then. As the silence, is the silence perceiving other? Can it perceive other? What problem can silence have? And can it see anything other than itself? Not so much. Okay. So number two, got in a group of people who are on a path of awakening and was struck by all the egos and the push-pull of the egos to make themselves look good. Or in some cases, the push-pull of ego to make themselves look lost. So that's basically the two core mechanisms of ego, isn't it? To try to puff itself up so I feel better, or to try to dumb itself down so that I fit in better. You know, those are the two core things. And you never see that anywhere greater than in spiritual pathway. I was pretty irritated the session did not address further enlightenment, but rather all the issues that were stopping enlightenment. Okay, stop laughing. Is it really true others are ego? That's a good question. Is it really true I am ego? Is it really true enlightenment can be stopped? Is it really true ego has a say? Where am I? All homework assignments 1 and 2. Next time we get together, I will drop down into the self and accept any and all ego as part of illusion. I'm assuming you mean this other group. You're saying you'll do that then. Staying in the love and glory of the self. Waiting to be guided by self in a discussion. Any other questions to ask? Any other strategies you will suggest? Well, I think you've already got enough questions there. I would stay with the where am I if you want the most direct route out of, but it's true. If I'm not an ego, nobody else is. And if there isn't really any ego and it doesn't have any say, it's just a bunch of thoughts that come from. Ego is a symptom of feeling I am somewhere, someone. When I feel I'm a limited separate being, then ego is the result of that. The thought process, the emotions, the experiences, karmic patterns all hang on that one thought. So if you can see that that is... what ego can you have being everywhere or nowhere in particular? What question is going to be relevant to you then, or all of that? So I wouldn't go diversifying with too many questions. Be very careful here that ego wants to try to get you into the details, into the branches of this tree of illusion. And we want to stay right at the root here. Keep your axe at the root. Where am I precisely? And what does that mean if I can't give a definitive answer? Which one of these bodies in this group am I identifying with? Which one of these egos am I objecting to? And where do I think I'm looking from? Am I dreaming I'm looking from somewhere in particular again? Another question on my radar screen is, where do I continue to self-sabotage? And then to ask, is it really true? Another realization, it is perfectly okay and all right for this body and ego to feel irritated, frustrated, tired, etc. Allow it to be part of the illusion, and I can love it from the self. It's part of the illusion. These phenomena that arise are perfect teaching tools to drill down further into what ego perceives as separating from the self. Very, very good, yeah. Thank you so much for your love, guidance, insight, and need to see awakening expanded. I'm so excited, happy, and can't wait for the next paradigm to crumble and self emerges. It's great that things are rolling along, and I'm really excited to be part of this program. And yet, it's totally fine if the body's tired. My body's tired right now after retreat, and I'm taking a week off after I record this. And I have no idea what I'm going to do with that time, and it's absolutely fine. So that can just be, can it? Yes, I'm an infinite being, but yes, my body's also quite tired. Or, if it's grumpy, it's grumpy. Whatever happens is whatever happens. Just keep your attention on what's most important. And sounds like you're making all of these reports sound like they're coming from a really, really good place. Okay, two more to go. Hi Helen, when I look at some things I've talked to you about regarding, well, I'm not going to read that bit out because it's quite personal, a particular pattern that this person was having. And I look at what is showing me up, what's showing up in my life. I see a belief that life needs me to manage it. It's a belief that life requires too much of me, and therefore I cannot get what I want. Everyone and everything becomes a job. This is what inquiry has revealed. I guess my next inquiry would be, is it true that life or the self requires maintenance? Or is it true that self needs to maintain anything? I'm looking at these appearances and looking to retire myself from this exhausting cycle. Joy and peace that seem elusive when this belief is active. Well, that's I remember very similar that it comes from this sense of doing. I'm doing this. I'm running my life. I'm managing. And really, again, looking at what am I actually doing, really? Because my body does something, my mind does something. What are you doing as the infinite silence? What is the space in the room that you're sitting in actually doing? And if it's not true for the space, it's even less true for you because you're more subtle in space, even as the self, as the noumenon. So, again, the question, where am I? To even see that your life needs a feel, rather, that your life needs managing, means there's identification with one body only going on. Yes, even for me right now, it seems like I'm looking through this body only. It seems like I can only see what these eyes see. I can't see what anyone else is experiencing that's listening to this or anything else. But I know that's not true. I know when I look through my senses, it'll seem like I'm somewhere. But my knowingness is so absolutely clear that I'm absolutely everywhere, indivisible, all present equally everywhere. Not the sum of parts, because that's divisible. Indivisible means never, ever, ever two. Cannot ever be two. Never. So I'm here, but I don't know where I am precisely. As I investigate that more, what does that mean? I must be everywhere. And again, we could look at the doingness and all of that, but I would urge you to keep it at the core of the illusion, which is this idea that you're only somewhere, that you have a location. Can this problem, this pattern, be an issue if you don't know where you are or which body is yours and which body isn't yours, more to the point? Can you still be managing then, having to sort this out then, or is it all just wiped off the board here completely? This question, where am I, is going to fix everything that comes up afterwards is going to be from the sense that you're looking from somewhere in particular. And if you don't know where you're looking from, if you don't know where you are, when I ask you, where are you precisely, and you can't say, in all honesty, then can you say, in all honesty, which body is yours and which isn't yours? And I'm using this question to illustrate a general point, and all these answers are for everyone, all these questions are for everyone. Don't make the mistake of, okay, this isn't my question, she's reading out somebody else's. Because and as I read these questions, I'm also recognizing these are my questions, and all of these answers are for me too. I'm not separating myself, okay, I'm here, I've done this, I don't need to study this. It's just, I can't do that anymore. I don't want to. I don't know where I am. I don't know whether I'm the one that's emailed the question in or the one that's answering. I don't know either. I don't want to know. It's so much nicer not to know, to just be truthful. If I don't know where I am, then which body is mine? Where am I looking from? Which body am I looking through? And can I really say for certain that I know which one it is? And I'm not advocating just kind of letting go of any problems or, you know, anything that needs sorting out in your life, but sort it out, let the body sort it out from that place of having no location. It'll be, what's exhausting is not actually this particular pattern. What diminishes the joy and all of that, joy and peace seem elusive, is the idea that you are somewhere. The more that you've been through the course and seen what the noumenon is, that it's formless, has no location. And whether you realize it or not, you are living as that more and more and more. It's building in the background and maybe becoming more and more obvious in the foreground. But then to go right back to condensing yourself down to being someone somewhere with this particular perspective from time and space, wherever we're looking now from one place only, we think we are, and dealing with this particular issue that happens in one particular body, one karmic pattern for one body only, is going to be increasingly exhausting. And that is always going to be the root of any suffering or any diminishment of peace and joy. So again, stay at the root. And I'm not saying I'm completely there. This weekend with the retreat, there was a lot of massive amounts of energy in the body, as happens when there's teaching going on. Still learning to kind of cope with that on an energetic level. It overloads, it builds up, and sometimes it's a challenge, work in progress. But it did give me, get me to slightly pay attention to the sense of having a location, the sense of having a location, hence the tiredness. It's nothing to do with the hours that the body's working. It's how much we're believing in the illusion. So it's a work in progress, even just very, very subtly. But there's always more to see. But if you, the questions are good. Is it true the self needs to maintain anything? But I would be, again, even more direct. I would stay with this question, where am I? And can I find myself in a particular place? And what does it mean to be indivisible? Those are so important. If I only had one question, if I was marooned on a desert island and I only had one question for some weird reason, I could only remember one question, it would be this one. Where am I? But just as important as the question that we all have to cultivate is to be equally as interested in the answer. What happens is you ask this question, where am I? And then everything goes quiet because you can't say, and there's just peace, love, and joy. And then we go back to picking up some idea that we've got some location. And then we go back to this sense that I'm someone somewhere. So we had to stay really, really interested. And that's what we need to do. Seeing that you guys are getting together in these meetups, which is fantastic, really discuss what it means. You know, bounce these ideas around. What does it mean if you can't find yourself somewhere in particular? What does that mean for everything else you're struggling with? And it's so important. Can you have any problem? Can it be true still that any problem that's happening in a location if you have no location? What do I mean by location? I mean one body only, saying this is where I am and nowhere else. Can I tell you anything that's wrong with this body is wrong with me or happening to me? And can that be true if I'm ignoring every other form that I have? This is what Krishna means when he says, all those that worship me. He means when you're unwilling to single out any particular body and say, this is mine, and all the rest aren't. And of course, we're moving away from that. But if we use this question, where am I, as a beautiful painkiller, and then we go right back to identifying with a particular body only, selecting a location and saying, this is where I am. Even as I'm saying these words, it still seems like I'm only looking through these eyes. And it will always be like that until this body expires. But I know that's not true with such utter conviction now. So hopefully that's helpful to guide the inquiry. Okay. Last but not least, having a beautiful experience with meditation merging into everyday life. Wonderful. That should be it. It should be your life should become a meditation, effortless meditation on having no location at all, being everywhere and nowhere in particular. And there is a strong sense that the vibrational level of retreat is flowing over to me, even though I'm not physically there. Thank you. Question, what shortcut or tip or trick did you use to be in awareness all the time? I have physical reminders, bells, post-it notes, and practice, meditation, self-inquiry, and contemplation, and a read. Is there something specific you would recommend to keep a constant experience? Words are failing me here. I totally get that. Constant experience is a oxymoron, paradox. But there isn't any word for a constant experience. Maybe we should just make a new word for a constant experience. If anyone has any suggestions for that, which is going on forever, you know, just anyway, digress. Tips or tricks to be in awareness all the time. Well, I really, really questioned if I was in it. And then I really, really questioned, okay, it's there. When I saw it was there, I began to fall in love with it's there all the time. Then the realization that all that's happening is attention is going out. Here's me, the awareness, and then it's attention. When the body's present in awareness, the human body, the capacity to pay attention to some thing, space, some thing becomes possible, and there seems to be this subject and object. So firstly, seeing I was the awareness through lesson three exercises, then noticing, okay, awareness is always present, but when it looks at a thing, when attention looks at something out there, and that's the body, the mind, emotions, all out there, then it's going to seem like I'm not in the awareness anymore, I'm not noticing it. So a double pronged investigation. I'm going to look at this more probably next month, but does it really matter where attention goes if I'm everywhere? Aren't I looking at awareness even if I think I'm looking at a laptop? Aren't I looking at awareness even if I think I'm looking at a body? And that'll give you the sense that you're not losing it, you're never out of it. There's no way you can look or experience, as we learned in lesson four, if all these forms are the noumenon. If there aren't any phenomena, then where does it matter where attention goes? To know that, to really investigate that, will give you the constant experience. Or to really look at, do I even need to keep my attention on it if I am it? Do I really need to be in it if I am it. Even those subtle tuning in processes then become less of a doing and just right now I don't have to tune in. I don't have to tune in the same way. I don't even have to see if the awareness is here, because there's no energetic gap between when I say I and when I say awareness. It's the same thing. So because I'm here, it's here. And that isn't even a thought process I have to run through anymore. I've looked so many times. And that's the fruit of Lesson 3's inquiry, the exercises we do in Lesson 3 to kind of get to this point where it's so obvious that when I look for a separate being, there isn't one. All there actually is the awareness, the noumenon. What does that mean? I can't be in it. I can't be out of it. I've never really been tuning in to it in a way. I've been recognizing myself. And the word I becomes the only true thing you can say really in reality. Because I, noumenon, awareness, self, Helen, they all become synonyms. And your name in particular will become a synonym. Meaning, even the idea of having to stay as that constantly becomes irrelevant, and then the experience is constant and effortless then, and that's the thing to really stay with. Do I even need to stay as this? Do I even need to tune in if I am that? That's the power that comes with recognizing the noumenon, recognizing there is no separate being in it, completely seeing I am that. And the power that comes from that declaration, and we talked about this in retreat. If you look at the Bible, Genesis is perhaps the truest part of the Bible. It says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word is God, meaning, if I utter I am that from a place of absolute, even if I don't utter it, I'm just thinking it, I'm knowing it, it absolutely has to manifest. So if I know, if I've seen there's no separate being, all I find when I look for myself is the noumenon. The effect of that is that your word becomes law and you stop disturbing yourself, stop believing that you're experiencing anything other than yourself. You stop dreaming. The constant experience then of just being that. No need to tune in or look for it or anything anymore. It's just here. How can it not be here? Where would it go? Where would I go? Where would that go that's everywhere? Where would that thing disappear to that's bigger than the universe? That was here before the universe. All the universes that have been and gone. All the ones that are existing right now. All of that becomes stable in the knowingness, and your word is God, your word is law, it absolutely manifests. That's why the power of a true teacher, that's the real transmission. When they speak, when they move, when they think, when they, when you're with them, you have to begin to experience that same manifestation, because they, there's no gap between what they mean when they say I and noumenon or awareness. So hopefully that's helpful. Keep up the great work. Keep meeting up with each other. Help each other. Everyone's question is your question. Every answer is your answer. And I will be doing this again on Sunday next week. It is Monday the 14th today after retreat. So I will do it on Sunday at the end of my week off. So please send me any feedback from listen to this, listen to lesson again. Really, really, if I could leave you with one sentence, it would be, it's so interesting what it means that you don't have a location. Keep looking at that, be obsessed with it until it's just effortless freedom, where even the idea of liberation seems absurd, that you ever thought you needed that or wanted it even, that you were in that category of having to work towards something. Wherever you are right now is perfect to start with that, to continue with that, to deepen with it. help each other, please, please help each other. Push through this reluctance to engage with other beings. Everyone else needs your help and you need everyone else's help. It absolutely is an essential part of waking up, because you are all those other beings as well. And to push through the social norms as a human being is a part of it. These people in a graduate program are your family completely. It's a growing family. And family are the ones we turn to when we need help most, aren't they? Maybe not our biological family, but perhaps even more important in terms of awakening. Okay, thank you. Lots of love. Keep up the good work, and you can absolutely break through any sense of illusion.